You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of PPC, broadcasting from the road, if you can't tell by the audio quality. I'm your host, James Edwards. We're going to work on that, and I'll tell you why I'm on the road in just a moment. But welcome, just the same, on this hot August night. It is Saturday evening, August the 1st, and we're here. We are live. James Edwards and, I believe, Keith Alexander back up in Tennessee tonight. Keith, are you there?
I'm here, just enjoying your bumper music. That's a lot of people don't know that Neil Diamond's hit records, for the most part, were recorded and produced in Memphis by a little-known or overlooked musical genius named Chip Smollman at American Studios.
Hold on right there, Keith. I want you to continue the story, but I'm going to let Sam know that I'm switching back over to my secure line now on the focus, right? So I'm going to switch over. We're going to improve some quality here. We'll tell everybody what's going on tonight.
Okay.
All right, and now we're back. I hope I sound a little bit better, so I'll give that brief introduction again. Now, that may happen a time or two tonight. As I told Sam a moment ago, I'm standing on one leg with a little bit of bubble gum and a old TV antenna. I'm out of town. The last time my wife will be able to travel, at least until she has our third child. She is now a little bit past 7 months into her expectancy. And this is always the time during her pregnancy that she begins to spike high blood pressure. She got a bad sugar test back a few days ago, high glucose. They're going to do a further test. And I know, because it happened with Isabel and Henry, she's going to be put onto bed rest. So what we did is we came down last Sunday morning. We came down and for one last little family trip, and we're still here, and we're going to be making our way back home next week before the next show. But anyway, that's where we are tonight. But I'll tell you this, Keith, as you well know, we didn't leave to come. My family didn't leave to come on this trip before we had an incredible evening last Saturday night. So the way I planned it was we had a little dinner for some of our most diligent and loyal supporters down in the Deep South. And we left straight from that dinner and drove on down even further in the South, about as far south as you can go before the road ends. But in any event, Keith, I just want to spend a quick moment before we get down to business tonight complimenting the audience one more time. I don't think we can overstate the caliber of this audience, and if it was ever in doubt, which it wasn't, it was proven to us all over again last weekend when we welcomed people just for a dinner, a simple dinner gathering from Vermont, from Washington State, from Oregon, from all across the South, the Midwest, the Mountain West. They were there. Smaller than our anniversary get-togethers, a little more informal, a one-night deal instead of a full weekend with Sam Bushman and the live remote broadcast. But nevertheless, it was really a moment of spiritual renewal, I think you could say, certainly during this year that has been so distraught. It was a time for people to come together and enjoy fellowship and camaraderie, and boy, we did it, didn't we, Keith?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you're the original international man of mystery. You despite the COVID-19 shutdown and despite all the negativity towards white advocacy, you were able to pull this off without a hitch. And like you said, the people that attend these things are the best people that you'd ever care to meet. They are really wonderful people. And, you know, they are the type of people that you want in the foxhole with you if the shooting starts, because these are wonderful people, the type of people that you can depend on, you know, come thick or thin to come through and make any type of anything we ask them to do basically a success.
Well, I'll tell you, it is a great cross-section of the best people in America. You had at that just this dinner gathering, doctors, lawyers, stay-at-home moms. I mean, people from all walks of life, but all of them, to a man, to a woman, to a child, and there were a lot of children there too, dignified, intelligent, courteous, kind, respectful. You name a positive attribute that a man or a woman could have, and it was manifested in the people that we had the privilege of sharing time with last Saturday night. So that's where we were last Saturday. And then from there, I departed for a little family vacation. We kind of piggybacked the two. But I want to say one more thing about last Saturday. What a great show it was. In our absence, Keith, I had the chance as I was driving this week to listen to last week's show. And I think this was the first show all year that I've missed. You know, normally there's a show, maybe two per year, where I'm out, and we have it covered in by the more than capable talents of Winston Smith and Sam Bushman or some variation thereof. But I got to tell you, not only am I rested, recharged, rejuvenated from taking a week off last week, and I was just, I told my wife today, I can't wait to get back on the show tonight, just 1 week off, and I just like, I can't wait. And I definitely feel that enthusiasm, a little extra pep in my step tonight from having taken a week off last week. But I listened to that show. Incredible content. Entertaining, informative. Sam Bushman is in a league of his own as a radio host for whatever talents people think we may have. I listened to that third hour with Sam Bushman last week, and it was boom, it was over. It's over already? Winston Smith, too. Brett McAtee in the second hour. A lot of call-ins. They took calls last week. They opened up the lines for calls. There was callers from Mississippi, from South Dakota, from Montana, and elsewhere. A lot of callers last week. High caliber all. It was just a very fun show, and I want to thank Sam and Winston for not only handling it, but for doing it every bit as good as it's ever been done.
Yeah, Sam and Winston are the dynamic duo, that's for sure. And, you know, Winston is still a part of our organization, even though he just comes on sporadically now. But every time he comes on, he never fails to entertain and to come through. You know, never disappoints. That's for sure.
No, he doesn't. He was well prepared. He had some good topics for conversation, some good calls. Great guest in Brett McAtee talking about the masking of America. Sam Bushman took over the third hour and took it to the house. If you missed last week's show, don't skip it just because we weren't on there. Believe me, you're going to enjoy it as I did. And anyway, since we did take off last week, we had a little more opening banter than usual tonight. Want to thank again everybody who turned out down in the Deep South for our out-of-town get-together last week. And, of course, again, to Sam and Winston for covering the show. We will start tonight's show when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to get after it in 3 minutes.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Suddenly still, and when you'd almost bet you could hear yourself sweat, he walks in. Eyes black as coal, and when he lifts his face, every ear in the place is on him. Starting soft and slow, like a small earthquake.
You know, I do love that song, and I like to play it in August here on the show because it begins hot August night. You know how much I despise this miserable climate in the land that I love so much, Dixie. But nevertheless, the weather is alien to people who came from Scotland and Ireland and England. But nevertheless, it's a good song. And Keith, even I'm old enough to remember when you could go to church and actually hear a Christ-centered message. And I can remember going to some of those old-time tent revivals back in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up. And it was a little bit like the Brother Love Traveling Salvation Show. Those revival pastors would get after it.
They would. They had the fire and brimstone that is missing from Joel Osteen and people like that today. And, you know, every time I hear that song, I think of our mutual friend Andrew Frazier with Oxtel Observer. You know, he was, I remember we played that as bumper music one time when he came on. And by the way, sometime tonight we need to play Country Boy Can Survive, because that's really the mode that I think we're trending towards between now and November. That's what we're going to take to heart.
We will, we'll see what we can do here. We're all spread out tonight, me down in Florida and you at home, and neither of us in the studio except for Sam Bushman over at the network studio. But we'll see what we can do about that. But Keith, at the blog, our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, we put up a series of articles this week that tickled your fancy anyway, and we're going to give them a little more play on the air tonight. I asked you what you'd like to cover this first hour, and you said, let's talk about white-on-white conflict. Now, that was an article that we posted from a commentator by the name of Clement Pulaski, who writes for the webzine Faith and Nation. But tell us what it's all about, Keith.
Well, he is taking a position that I think we all come to eventually when you've been in this arena, you know, the topics that we cover so long, you know, for as long as we have, that, you know, you start looking at who are the problems, you know, where do our problems come from? We know what the problems are. And, of course, people mention the Yankees. They mention the Puritans. They mention the Jews. They mention the liberal press, the leftist elite, the globalists, all these things. But the point that Clement Pulaski was making is that our real enemies seem to be the, you know, what would you call them? The other white people. You know, it's like, you know, what's that? You know, the other white bread or the other white meat or something, you know, which is pork, supposedly, rather than chicken. Well, white-on-white conflict, basically what we're seeing now, according to Pulaski, and he makes a very good point, is a group of renegade whites, much like the Puritans or the sanctimonious roundheads that preceded them in England in the Glorious Revolution, so-called Glorious Revolution that brought, you know, the Royalists down and brought Oliver Cromwell to power. These are people that seem to, you know, I've pointed out before that the Puritans and Massachusetts Bay Colony, which was their entity in America, was different from all other colonies that were established by the English crown and even by the French or the Dutch or any of the other Portuguese, other colonizers. Most of them set up colonies for the purpose of making money and bringing products back to the mother country and wealth back to the mother country. But that was not the purpose of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The Massachusetts Bay Colony was seen by a benevolent crown as a way to deal with religious dissidents, and in particular, just to put it bluntly, it was to be a dumping ground for religious crackpots. Well, those religious crackpots, to a large extent, caused the Civil War, because and they're the source of this constant claptrap that we hear that the Civil War was about slavery. Well, for a tiny abolitionist group of zealots out of New England, and also, you know, people like John Brown, who came from New England originally and went off to Kansas and other parts, Virginia, he was where he eventually met his Waterloo. That's what the Civil War was about. Not from
but Keith, hold on, Keith. One thing,
seceded from the Union, but that's what it was about. And then now, you know, they haven't gone away. They're doing it again. They're behind Black Lives Matter. They're behind Antifa. They are they're the foot soldiers, at least, of Antifa for the most part. They are the direct spiritual descendants of those Puritans, according to Clement Pulaski, and I think he makes a great point by pointing that out.
All right, I know you're on the phone tonight, so it's hard to hear sometimes, but I wanted to chime in very quickly about John Brown, and then to your larger point, which is obviously much more important, but do you remember my grandparents did it? They would never say a cuss word. When they got really upset, they would just say, John Brown, you know, instead of any cuss word.
John Brown was infamous in the South, and rightly so. He was a nut, and if you want to find out what America generally thought about John Brown until the advent of the Civil Rights Movement, you need to check Netflix or your local Blockbuster, if they still have any of those, or a place like that.
They don't. It goes to show Keith never graduated past VHS tapes. If he has to ask if there's still any Blockbusters around, I'll tell you the last remaining Blockbuster is at your house, Keith.
Yeah, it is. I've got it all there, and I've got several copies of this movie for anybody that might want to come by and see it. Santa Fe Trail. It's a very unusual title for a Civil War-themed movie, but it's all about John Brown, who's played by Raymond Massey and played excellently by Raymond Massey as a wild-eyed lunatic, and well, that's what he was. And
Keith,
you got Errol Flynn as Jeb Stuart, and Ronald Reagan as George Custer. And this is before the Civil War. This is when they graduated from the West Point class of 1954, where the commandant of West Point was none other than Robert E. Lee.
If there was a movie put on VHS cassette before 1965, it's in Keith's living room. And if you visit our fair town, you can go into that theater where Tammy and the Bachelor airs daily. You still doing daily showings of Tammy, Keith?
No, I don't do that. But my two favorite movies, I've got the chick flick Tammy and the Bachelor, which is the perfect movie to tell for you to show your daughters and sons. It tells you what a young man ought to be looking for in a potential bride and what a young woman ought to be seeking in a potential husband. And then,
well, let me tell you about the experience. If you watch that,
Christ, the movie of all time is Shane, of course, with Alan Ladd.
Okay.
He is a Christ figure. And
well, let me tell you, if you watch a movie at Keith's house, you get. We're talking over a little bit tonight because we're not in the studio together. But if you watch a movie at Keith's house, you get the extra bonus of some pauses during the movie where Keith will be like Cecil B. DeMille and sort of commentate what's going on and break it down for you and give you the rest of the story. It's a fantastic experience. Really should be on the tourism board's can't miss seat.
Tears, right?
And an Amos and Andy. You know, Amos and Andy also plays there, don't they?
The collection of Amos and Andy TV shows. They will wonderfully know it.
Hold on 1 second. We're going to continue this conversation.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
With political pressure rising, talks on a huge coronavirus relief measure resumed today, focused on restoring a newly expired $600 per week supplemental unemployment benefit, a fresh $1,200 direct payment to most Americans, and hundreds of billions of dollars in aid to states, businesses, and the poor. President Donald Trump is eager for an agreement, but talks so far have not yielded progress. The administration is willing to extend the $600 jobless benefit in the short term, but is balking at other demands Democratic negotiators keep adding to the bill. The $600 per week jobless benefit officially lapsed yesterday, and Democrats haven't made it clear whether they will extend it without securing other bill priorities. Principal negotiators, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and top Senate Democrats Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi met again in hopes of breaking the stalemate. This is USA Radio News.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our health care. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly healthcare costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 27 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Florida, which is continuing to battle a coronavirus surge, is now preparing for Hurricane Isaias, complicating efforts to contain the virus. The entire east coast of Florida is bracing for potential impact. The hurricane has maximum sustained winds of over 80 miles an hour and is moving over Andros Island in the Bahamas. The center of the storm was expected to move near or over Grand Bahama Island late in the day before heading toward Florida's east coast tonight and tomorrow morning. Florida's governor has declared a state of emergency, urging residents to have 7 days' worth of food, water, and medicine ready.
The Justice Department scheduled two additional federal executions, an announcement that comes weeks after it fought off last-minute legal challenges and successfully resumed federal executions following a 17-year pause. The executions of Christopher Villalba and William LaCroix are both scheduled to be carried out in late September. The government carried out three executions in July, and two other executions had been previously set for August. This is USA Radio News.
You know, I don't know what the Jewish Elvis was intending with that particular song, but I'll tell you this. It takes me back to those days when you could go to a church and get something other than the same old claptrap. Well, it's like you mentioned Andrew Fraser, Keith, Professor Fraser from Australia, our good friend, as he calls the church now, MSNBC at prayer. Yes, there was a time, even in my lifetime, when you could get something other than that. And so I like a good old tent revival when they used to have them.
Well, I know it's
it is August, so we play this.
Disappointing development for you. I remember for the longest time, you and Eddie both thought that the Southern Baptists were going to emerge as a faithful remnant. While all these mainline Protestant denominations like mine, the Episcopalians and Methodists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Northern Baptists, Disciples of Christ, etc., what they called the Seven Sisters of the Mainline, and now Roman Catholics, they've got the most leftist pope I think they've ever had. You thought that somehow the Southern Baptists were going to go unscathed, but now fundamentalists, including the Southern Baptists, have not only embraced the social gospel with a zeal equal to or greater than the mainline Protestants, they have added to it the heresy of Jewish dispensationalism, and they've gone to such extent that they have purged you. You've been officially wiped off the roll. Of the Southern Baptist denomination. They made a point of doing that. I can't imagine.
Well, I will say this. I don't think I ever put any faith in the Southern Baptist Convention. I put faith in my church, and my church held the line all the way to the bitter end.
Well,
so I was right about that.
They did. Your pastor is one of the true Christian heroes of the age with the way that he would not flinch or budge an inch. He said, I'm not going to denounce James or expel him from my church. You tell me what he's done that's wrong, and then he would defend you. And I tell you what, God bless him. Well, wish we all had pastors like that.
Well, that's right. And I tell you what, all these statues that are going down when we reclaim our destiny and when things turn around, and they will, and we're going to be talking about that in the next hour with our guest. I'll give you a little more information about that in the next segment. We're going to be talking about historical cycles and how it's inevitable that the pendulum will swing back to us. You just wait and see. It may not happen in our lifetime or our children or grandchildren's lifetime, but ultimately it will come back. It has to come back. It has no choice but to come back. And when it does, I hope that one of the monuments that have been taken down will be replaced by a monument to my pastor, who was the last Christian martyr, I guess, as far as that goes. But anyway, back to Clement Pulaski's article about white-on-white conflict. And yes, I mean, we have a lot of enemies, and those enemies are all too real. But his position has been the same as what I've said over many years on this program, is that at the end of the day, the buck has to stop with our people. Yes, we know that the other opposes us and seeks to destroy us, but they wouldn't be able to if it wasn't for what he calls the apostate whites, or whites who bend the knee and are subservient. They're like the guy in 300, the movie with Gerard Butler about Leonidas at the gates. you know, the little troll who goes over to the other side, you know, for a little temporary comfort and a pat on the head by his oppressors. But Clement Pulaski wraps up his article thusly. All of the enemies that we know, and you named them, Keith, in the last segment, should be secondary to the issue of white apostasy and white predilection for abstract revolutionary thinking. And it's, I think, as you put it, Keith, sort of an inverted form of white supremacy in that, listen, we know that these other races aren't able to do these things, to really foster an age of so-called equality and this utopia that we want to create on Earth. And by the way, Britt McAtee talked about that last week. You will never create a heaven on Earth. Heaven is in heaven, and this earthly realm is an entirely different thing. And it's a fool's errand to try to put that here. But in any event, I too agree with people who say, well, no army ever put on their banner, blame us first. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying we have to be accountable for the mistakes that we've made too as a race and as a people. And the biggest mistake we ever made was going along with this scam, this shakedown that we're seeing right now, and thinking that we are somehow virtuous if we put our people, our family, our children last. No, you're not virtuous. You're the biggest fool, and you're really reprehensible. You're embarrassing, and that's what too many whites are falling
into. And Dissident Mama pointed this out in her article, too, and I'll touch on this. The main thing Pulaski is pointing to is don't get confused and think that black people are our primary adversaries, or that homosexuals, or that feminists, or whatever, all these groups, all of those groups are foot soldiers. I've said many times on the show that in every left-wing movement, the foot soldiers might be black, they might be brown or Hispanic, they might be homosexuals, they might be women, they might be, you know, transgendered individuals or whatever, but the generals are always Jewish. That's my insight. But then on the other hand, Clement's insight is that they couldn't do it. They're only 2.2% of the population. So they have to get allies. And, you know, even in the civil rights movement, you know, you had people like Schwerner and Goodman who are Jewish. But, you know, the two of the three guys that were killed in the Mississippi burning murders, they were leftists, trained leftists from the New York City area. And they came down, but then you had all these white freedom riders. In fact, Kevin McDonald was one of them, I believe. He told me that he was from Wisconsin, and he was all down with the struggle until he got in. And it was basically watching the Jewish hierarchy operating in the civil rights movement that made the scales fall from his eyes and make him understand who the enemies were. But there are two groups of whites, renegades, I would call them. One are the spiritual descendants of the sanctimonious roundheads or the Puritans of New England. And, of course, they were always experts in racial matters because they had no people that weren't white around them up there in places like Maine or Massachusetts or New Hampshire or Vermont or whatever. And then you had the people that were globalists or, you know, financially interested, let us put it that way, in seeing that their side won and changing the situation. And, you know, this is those people. You have people that are sellouts, and you have people that are just useful idiots. And those people are essential to the left's program, and they are in full view in the recent Black Lives Matter / Antifa protests in places,
Keith,
like Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis.
Keith, there is a song by the Monkees that I think is applicable to this. A little bit me, a little bit you. And so we know that's not really what that song was about. But anyway, but that is a great song. We know that the generals didn't just show up here and say, we're going to take over all your institutions, and this is what we're going to do. No, they didn't do that. They had sellouts and traitors and collaborators from our own ranks. And this is the thing. It's a little bit me, a little bit you. I liken it to, you've seen the cartoons of the giant who is being held down by a string by the pygmies, and all the giant has to do is wake up and flex a muscle. Yeah, the giant wakes up and he flexes his muscle and he's freed. Again, though, the accountability has to begin with our people. I don't pass the buck and say, well, these people did all these bad things to me. No. I mean, yes, they may have. But it's up to me to do something about it. It's up to us to do something about it. We wake up, we flex our muscles, and all this can be shaken off, but it has to stop and end with our people. And I don't blame our people, but I put our people are responsible for changing this.
Well, no other group or race has a built-in fifth column the way that whites do. You don't find fifth column of any magnitude, or a Jewish fifth column of any magnitude, or a Hispanic fifth column of any magnitude. We alone deal with this, and it's been around. And see, you can't blame it all on the Jews, because the Jews didn't become a factor in America until from 1890 to 1920. But, of course, we had the problem that manifested in the Civil War, which is from white fellow Americans in New England, primarily, fanning the flames, picking the scabs off the wounds, the way that the left continues to do today.
And we're going to be talking about that a lot more with Mark Weber in our second hour. I'll give you a little preview of what's to come in the second hour and beyond when we come back. Stay tuned.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen, by a friend of Medjugorje. Whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
sign says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn.
All right, we're back. Keith Alexander, is that what we need? Do we need country boys who can survive?
Well, thank goodness we have them. We've got them down here, and we've got them all over Red State America. And they're going to be the salvation, or, you know, at least they're going to be the opposition to the, the irreligious, godless forces that are opposing us and contesting us in America today. So that's where our hope lies, that and God, okay?
If you can hear me, I know I'm having a little bit of spotty connection here because I am on the road and whatnot, but I was received a voicemail from a supporter in southern Mississippi this week who said that since the state made the horrible decision to take down the glorious former state flag of the state of Mississippi, which... seen more on private property than he's ever seen in his life. Now, that's just one man's observations, but I do hope that it's true. Very quickly, let me tell you what's coming up in the next hour, ladies and gentlemen. Radical regimes in other countries have issued solemn promises of fundamental change and launched ambitious, far-reaching governmental and societal programs. Of these so-called past progressive governments that tried hard to achieve those supposedly noble and lofty goals. Well, in the second hour, I am really looking forward to this conversation. Mark, the director for the Institute for Historical Review, he is going to provide that answer. We're going to look at past societies that have gone down this ill-fated course that America is on right now. And we're going to draw some historical parallels. We're going to talk about historical cycles and how they bend and sway. You're not going to want to miss that. And I hope that you'll leave the second hour with a little bit of hope and encouragement. In the third hour, John Friend of the American Free Press and the Barnes Review will be with us, Jack Ryan, too. Stay tuned. Much more to come. Keith only with us for 1 hour tonight because of the distance with us being in separate locations. A little bit difficult for us to all be on three different phone calls once we bring in a guest. But we'll be back in the studio and at full strength next week. But Keith, we had another article from William S. Lind entitled Striking Back. What was that all about?
Well, William Lind is been a guest on our show. Picked him out early on as a one of the leading lights in our movement. He is he wrote a great article about lambs, white heterosexual able-bodied males. We're the new other in America, and that's what is happening. Well, Lind is back on that theme again in Striking Back, telling us that we must first, before we strike back at anyone, we need to know who the enemy is. It is not black people. They are just tools being used by the real enemy, he says. Who are they? The cultural Marxists, the purveyors of political correctness, multiculturalism, and white guilt. And, of course, all of these are dominated by Jewish power and influence, okay? That's who the cultural Marxists were. That's who they are today. They are the people that decided that Marx and Engels got it wrong, that the real fault line in human society was not economic class, the proletariat versus the rich. Instead, it was race. It wasn't even religion. It was race. And that was diabolically clever because even the stupidest people can comprehend race. Poor people want to be rich, so consequently economic class doesn't work, and religion is just too esoteric and intellectual for some people to hang their animus on, but race works, and that's what they've done. He said, so, you know, what we have now is racism is the great sin. Apparently Moses dropped a tablet on his way down the mountain that said, "Thou shalt not be a racist." I've searched all through the King James Bible and couldn't find any reference to racism as a sin. But racism has been under a constant process of change throughout my lifetime and yours, James. It used to be that if you hated people because of their race, you were a racist. And anybody could be a racist. A black person could be a racist. A white person could be a racist. Oriental person could be a racist, yada, 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 as they said on Seinfeld. But now only white people can be racist. And furthermore, it doesn't matter whether you intend to be a racist or not, or whether you say anything that could be considered racist under the old regime. You are racist. That's what systemic racism, institutional racism, and white privilege is about. If now a racist is a synonym for a white person, and this is what is animating the Black Lives Matter movement. They have all white people in their crosshairs, and there are only a few white people, millennials for the most part, who are stupid enough to hate themselves or insane enough to hate themselves, and the battle lines are being drawn. But another point that Lynn makes in his article is, second, he says, we must always follow one rule, never initiate violence. If they start it, then we have both a right and a duty to defend ourselves. And at that point, we should fight to win. But every time the right starts a physical fight, it helps the cultural Marxists, even if we do win in the end. They become victims who, in a feminized culture, other Americans have a sympathy and empathy with and identify with. At that point, we lose on a moral level, which is the most powerful level of conflict. This is what we learned through Marshall McLuhan's book, The Medium is the Message, which came out in 1964. Broadcast media creates public opinion. That's what happened in the Civil Rights Movement. The whole thing was choreographed. They would send civil rights workers through groups, points like the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee, near the University of the South at Suwannee. That was like the Paris Island for nonviolent protesters. And the nonviolent protesters weren't just learning to be nonviolent. They were learning how to manipulate broadcast media, particularly when the broadcast media was owned by their friends, Jewish power and influence, who owned ABC, CBS, NBC, and whatnot. They made, for the first time in American history, the police into the villains and the lawbreakers into the heroes. The lawbreakers were the civil rights workers, all dressed up to look like Urkel with little white shirts and little skinny ties. And they would be provoking the police, but none of this would be transmitted or broadcast to the world. Only when they provoked a reaction, like police dogs on leashes, you know, is that the worst that they did? Or fire hoses? You would have thought they were machine gunning people down the way it was portrayed to the world, and the world bought into the narrative of the leftist Jewish media. That's what he is talking about here. That's why, for example, Charlottesville was a failure, because they provoked the conflict by not separating the protesters from the counter-protesters. And then the talking heads for all the alphabet soup media outlets, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, whatever, yada, 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 again, as they say at Seinfeld, they said it was all the fault of the right-wingers. So consequently, guess what? The right-wingers were swept out. Now, see, black people still don't understand what went on in the civil rights movement. When you go to something like, when you tune into John Lewis's funeral, it's obvious that these black people are smugly patting themselves on the back saying, we did this all by ourselves. We just linked arms, started singing spirituals, swaying back and forth, and the walls came tumbling down. And, of course, that's the furthest thing from the truth. In fact, some of the more prescient people, like John Lewis, realize that. In fact, one of the things he said at Selma is said, he said, thank God for Bull Connor. He said, we have to provoke the white authorities into attacking us. If we don't do that, we've lost. They're just going to have a stroll in the park, and they would not, you know, if the police had not had the police dogs, if they had not basically run back trying to control the situation, run the people back so they could get run down and have these cameras rolling, nobody would be going back to Edmund Pettus Bridge every year for a photo op. That whole thing would have flopped. And that's what Lynn understands.
They certainly can't go further than the Edmund Pettus Bridge, because if they did, they'd get robbed, raped, or murdered there in Selma. We put an article about that on the website as well this week. Keith Alexander, thank you, buddy. And we'll be back in the studio together next week. Coming up, everybody.